It is our great pleasure to be with Gates Elise here on the Paula Gordon Show. He's going to tell me to stop that. All the same, it is true. Bill Russell.
Well, I want to pick up where you left off, but you mentioned Faulkner, and I think it was Faulkner who said that, you know, it was brought to a group of writers to do, to, you know, tell them how to win a Nobel Prize or whatever, who got up, said, "Writers write," and sat back down. I think it was Faulkner.
Certainly attributed
but to him. I think of that because it wasn't as if you just sort of appeared at the New York Times and abused your friendships. You had been writing for a long, long, long time. This is part of what you do. And that storytelling piece seems to me to be absolutely central to it, and particularly to your work, but really in terms of how a community understands itself, how a culture understands itself. It's the stories we tell. And if they're true stories, then we know something. If they're dishonest stories, all those kinds of things.
Absolutely right.
And that's pretty much seems to be what you've done most of your life.
What I've done is what I started to do before I started to do it. What I started to do before I started to write was to listen. And I started to listen when I was a boy of about 10 or 11 or 12 or 13. I would come home after school, and my mother had a very popular dress shop in the community I mentioned before, Ocean City, New Jersey. And my mother's regular clientele were the middle-aged women of the town. They were not the young teeny boppers of their time. They were women of substance, women who had educated women, the middle, you know, the mainstream women, and some of the more affluent women.
This would be in the 40s, probably?
This was in the 40s and into the 50s. And my mother had that store for 60 years. And my mother didn't die, and she was 99 when she did. She died in 1999 at the age of 99.
5 days after you finished the manuscript.
I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I must correct myself. She died in 2005. At the age of 99.
5 days after you'd finished the manuscript.
Yeah. But what it was about her that influenced me, and what it was about her store that influenced me, was the women would come in, presumably to buy a dress or just to look. It wasn't really always the purchase that occurred. They'd come in to browse, and they would have time on their hands and would talk about this and that. Might start off about how a dress looked on them or they thought it might before they tried it on. But it was just a kind of talk show that she had, though really what she did was listen more than do the talking. She was very curious, which is one of the things I inherited from her. And she came from the borough of Brooklyn in New York City. She was the daughter of Italian immigrants. She was born in Brooklyn in 1907, and she did finish high school in Brooklyn, and then she had a job at one of the major department stores in Brooklyn called Abraham and Strauss. And she, for 4 years, worked in the dress department and then became a buyer or assistant buyer in the dress department. When she met my father, which she did in 1928 at an Italian wedding, my father had a cousin named Nick Pileggi. His son is married to Nora Ephron. I don't know if you know the Nick Pileggi,
absolutely,
who did Casino and Goodfellas with Scorsese for Hollywood movies. Anyway, his father and my father were cousins from Calabria, which is the southern tip of Italy. And it was at the wedding in 1928 in which my mother's sister and this cousin of my father's, Nick Pileggi Sr., married. And my mother and father then met and corresponded, and a year later they're married, and my mother left Brooklyn forever and went down to Ocean City and started this dress shop, which she did continue for 60 years. But anyway, back to the story of me. I worked behind the counter doing dusting and, you know, the boxes that you'd fold for the dresses and the tissue paper to be smoothed out in there, and other chores, going out for tea for some of the women in the afternoon. But what I'm recalling, though, is the overhearing conversations about stories of what was going on. That's what you referred to, Bill, before, stories. And these stories were interesting to me. They were not newsworthy. They were not something that you would find printed anywhere, but the stories evoke something of the spirit of the time. You mentioned it was World War II. Yes, it was. And the women were talking as the mothers of people who were in the service, or the wives of people who were maybe forced into working in defense plants because so many important jobs were not what you were trained to do, but what you had to do because of the dire circumstances of the war years. The women would be talking about perhaps something of the what they thought of as not so very moral times, because in the expediency of a war, young women would run off unannounced and get married, or maybe not get married, just run off. There was a lot of that sense of urgency, a sense of peril, the sense of we better live now because we don't know how long we're going to live. There was even a certain concern, as I'm born in a town that's all along the Atlantic Ocean, Ocean City as a resort. There was even concern about enemy submarines or invasions along the beach. And at night, indeed, at night, all the lights of the town on one side, the streetlights I'm talking about, or along the boardwalk, were painted black on one side, and then the light shone through the other. Never was it casually taken that we should not reflect the presence of this island. And there was a nighttime patrol along the boardwalk of people looking for enemy vessels. And there's a sense of, I mean, here we are in a little resort in southern New Jersey, but had a sense of the possibility of war and invasion. This was,
and,
of course,
and you're in an Italian family.
And I'm in an Italian family, which not, and to go further, my father being the one immigrant, I told you my mother was from an immigrant family that settled in Brooklyn long before World War II. Actually, they settled in Brooklyn in 1920. But my father, who came to the United States around the same time and became a citizen in 1928, was the only one who left his family behind. He had a widowed mother, and he had brothers who were fighting in Mussolini's army in 1941, 42, 43. Trying to stave off the Allied invasion of Italy, which was, of course, not accomplished, as the invasion proceeded from North Africa through Sicily up to Italy, finally into Naples and Rome and Milan, and the end of the Italian front happened before the end of the war. We all know that. But what I knew from afar, behind the counter of my mother's dress shop, was something of the odd circumstances of my background, being the son of a man who was born in Italy, whose brothers, my uncles, that I never would know until many, many years later after the war. These uncles were wearing fascist uniforms, and I thought, here in this little store, I didn't think it now, here in this little store is the international conflict of World War II played out in the mind of a tailor. My father was a tailor. His brothers that he left in 1920-something when he emigrated forever out of Italy, these brothers that did not move, how important it is to make a move, sometimes a move for just improving yourself, or sometimes a move inspired by the idea that there are better lives to be led far, far from home if you would only make that trip to get out of there. It's a hard thing to say goodbye if you're familiar with everything. You grow up in a place, no matter how impoverished you may be, how limited the horizons may be in your future, it is sometimes easy, or let's say it's sometimes what people do is to do nothing, stay there. Well, he wasn't one of those. He was a go-getter in a way, my father was, and my mother in her way also. So I had these two parents, Italian or Italian-American in my mother's case, and this my mother really making the money, because my father was a wonderful designer and craftsmen of men's clothing, but there wasn't a lot of, there wasn't a market for that, not a big enough market. But my mother's style as a entrepreneurial vendor of dresses, and as a curious woman, and these women who would come in and talk about things, and they talk about what we later would think of as women's rights, or they talk about what we would now think of as racism. They talk about intermarriage, they talk about the how much importance did the church or religion have in private life. I mean, these are issues that we're playing on today. The issue today of immigration, do we want newcomers in our foreign land, or is this going to be a foreign land to those who want to come here? I mean, how much of a barrier do we build?
Well, and you talk talk about all of us as boat people, all of us.
Yeah, I mean, but these are the dialogues in my mother's dress shop, and I'm a kid eavesdropping behind the counter and hearing stories. And so when it came for me to write for the high school newspaper, I'd write about stories of my classmates, but I'd write about some of the characters that I thought were characters in the town, little feature stories. And when I went to the University of Alabama, I did the same thing on a college newspaper. And then I made that fortunate connection I mentioned earlier, this Mississippi-born classmate of mine, whose famous uncle was then the managing editor of New York Times, the aforementioned Turner Catledge. But when I went to the Times, I did not want to write the news. I did not want to be a Pulitzer Prize-winning foreign correspondent. I didn't want to be a foreign correspondent, a national correspondent, a political correspondent. I didn't even want to be a newspaper man. But I wanted to work on a newspaper, writing stories about people who were not newsworthy, who were not ergo important.
And it was at a very different time. That might sound, oh, well, of course, it was a time when newspapers didn't do that. Let's come back in just a moment with Gay Talese so I don't have to interrupt you.
Except, of course, for the Herald Tribune.
Well, yes, the writer's paper versus... We'll be back in a moment with a great deal more with the Honorable Gay Talese as our guest. Please be with us when we return.